Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host today, Fred Monroe. Chris Kington Barker was scheduled to be with us here this week and she is off, so I will be with you 2 weeks in a row, but I'm glad I could be with you today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights about diverse members of our community and diverse projects in the community. We want to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-range ramifications of change or, in some cases, lack of change in our society. We're going to talk today about mental health recovery and finding hope and identity and empowerment for a lot of people who have mental health issues that we want to talk about. Mental health affects everyone in some manner, in spite of the fact there are people who will deny that it ever affects them or their family. Individuals often hesitate to reach out for support because their experience has been that they are stigmatized or the things surrounding their mental health somehow is something that they can't talk about or can't find a way to talk about. This stigma can affect both their likelihood to seek help and how we may look at them if they seek help in recovery. This is an effort to really look at mental health in our community and how we are or are not addressing things that happen with it. Less than one-third of the adults with a mental health issue will get help. Fear of others' perceptions as well as discrimination are the main reasons people do not access the kind of help they need. And the educational process is really what we want to talk about with regard to ways to really look at that stigma and move it out of the way. It is possible for up to 90% of the people who have mental health issues to really significantly reduce their symptoms and improve their quality of life, and that isn't getting addressed on a regular basis. Joining me today are Frank Warren. He is the Prevention Outreach Division Manager for San Luis Obispo County Behavioral Health. Kirsten Vina, and she is the Prevention Specialist Health Educator at Cal Poly's Campus of Health and Well-Being. And Caroline, okay, I'm going to blow it. I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Just don't say anything. I'm awful with names, and I'm sorry. Let's see. That's Cerusi?
Correct.
Cerusi, thank you. Okay, and she's the Community Outreach Coordinator for Transitions Mental Health Association. We're really going to have a discussion today about the stigma around mental health and some of the ways to address that, but we're also going to talk about a community forum that's coming up on February 6th called Journey of Hope, and that we want that to be part of the discussion too, because that's something that's available to anyone in the community who would like to find out more about how to address both the stigma and ways to look at mental health in our community or in their own personal lives. You are welcome to call in and be part of this program today if you would like. The phone number is 805-781-3875. Remind you all that regardless of where you live, you have to put 805 in front of the phone number now, and we can't do anything about that or the call won't go through, but that's 805-781-3875, and we would like you to be part of our discussion today. About a third of the population at some point in their life has some mental health issue, and I double check. I'm not even sure the word issue is an acceptable word to use, so there may be a better term than that, and I may get corrected on that. But the concept that nobody wants to talk about it, even though a third of the population is affected by it directly, which means in reality all of us are affected by it, probably comes into play in your guys' daily existence. Who would like to jump in first?
Well, I'll just start and just say thank you.
By the way, everybody who knows Frank knew Frank was probably
the first. It's okay, everyone was looking around. This is a great opportunity to have this conversation, Fred, so I really appreciate that. I haven't had a chance to meet Kirsten Vinther yet, so this is exciting for me to actually get to work with you. We have staff who work at Cal Poly, and so just the fact that Cal Poly is represented at the table here in this community is really important, and that has been a great movement over the last 5 years to see the wellness and recovery movement, as well as the identification of mental health as a very important subject for young people. So with that said, I will, kind of start by saying that in this community, the open dialogue around mental health, mental illness, substance abuse and recovery is our greatest champion. The open dialogue, the ability to have these conversations on air, these conversations that we have in the hallways, in our classrooms, our dinner tables, really is how we make this impact. Because you are absolutely correct. This is everybody's issue. And I don't think I don't have a problem with issue. I think it is everybody's. It's ours at the grocery store. It's ours in our neighborhoods. It's for some people, that feeling of despair because they don't know what to do. For some people, it's a great celebration of recovery and how they have gotten the help that they've, you know, sought and needed. We see all of it on a regular daily basis. So, but I credit mostly open dialogue, the ability to talk about it. So I'm glad to be here for that reason.
Yeah. Kirsten, I'm glad to have someone from Cal Poly in this discussion, yeah, because I think probably if we were to pick a population that I would consider to be most pivotal to make a difference, it would be younger people, because on a number of levels, mm-hmm, if we address the mental health issues that may be affecting some of the students in the university environment, we're affecting the long range goals of our community and
absolutely
our country.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're also in a lot of cases then affecting the goals and things that go on with their families.
Yes.
There aren't too many college kids that don't have ties to their parents that in some cases are ties they would much rather have go away, but they exist. And so we really reach out to a tremendous community population. And my hunch is that when we're dealing with a university like Cal Poly, where pretty much everybody that gets into Cal Poly is a cutting-edge student,
yes,
you're dealing with a population that is sometimes very driven, sometimes over-focused, sometimes obsessed, mm-hmm, in different areas. Mm-hmm. So I think that really is a population that if not to imply that the people who are not college students, mm-hmm, who are older than college students or younger than college students, are not equally important. That becomes a population, though, that if you can center in on, you can really make a difference with.
Absolutely. You know, college age, 18 to 24, there are a lot of mental illnesses that kind of present themselves for the first time, or at least announce themselves for the first time in that age range. And we know that transition is incredibly difficult. So a lot of these students are coming in 17, 18 years old, and suddenly they're kind of walking on their own and living on their own. And it's this huge time of transition. And then that combined with the fact that Cal Poly is a very driven community. It's a very driven student population. And they celebrate oftentimes the sense of busyness as a marker of success. I stayed up all night studying, or I am so driven, my whole focus is this. Well, that, you know, we know that those kinds of behaviors also exacerbate the transition, exacerbate mental health issues, and make it harder to be honest, like we were talking about, and just talk about the fact, like, I am struggling right now and I don't know what to do. And I think that's probably the most common thing that I see, is that so many people who have this belief that everybody else is having a great time except for me. Mm-hmm. And that the conversation just isn't being had the way we need it to. I think it's changing.
And I don't want this to sound sarcastic. I don't mean it that way. An awful lot of the people they believe are having a good time are lying about, mm-hmm, it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They're lying to themselves and they're lying to the people out in the outside, which I think makes both groups of people feel somewhat isolated.
Mm-hmm. They're presenting this idealized vision or version of themselves. And I think that, yes, it does hurt both sides, right? It hurts the people who know, like, this isn't what my life looks like. And it also is sort of, I think, a lot of times a person's way of saying, I'm fine. Look, my life looks this way. I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
And on that, I think that it's so important to take that message and understand that because people are trying to put on maybe that message of, I'm okay, I still got this, nothing is wrong, then it makes it more difficult for people to say, wait, I am struggling, but everyone else is fine. So the more, you know, as we've discussed, the more that we have this dialogue, the more that we hear from people that they are struggling, then it becomes, you know, more, it's almost like permission to speak. And to say, hey, to speak up and say, hey, I have this too, and we're together in this, and I'm not alone. Because I had some numbers that, you know, 2/3 of college students, this was in 2015, do not seek treatment for any mental health stressors that they're seeking. So, you know, what is that that they're not going out and seeking help? You know, and part of that we're seeing is, again, the stigma and the isolation that they feel and not knowing who can help them. And again, I have another number here. It says 60.5% of college students report feeling lonely and isolated. I mean, that's a very, very powerful, large number, and a powerful feeling to have of lonely and isolation. And, you know, we're finding, and that's a big message of our keynote speaker for Journey of Hope, which I'm sure we'll get to, is healing through community and by being a resource for other people. Mm-hmm. It's okay, even if you're not struggling, to be that hand for somebody else.
Yeah. And we look at society, and everybody sitting at the table is saying that we think that talking about this is a positive experience to have a dialogue. Mm-hmm. Everybody we may know on a regular basis, we've self-selected out the people who are likely to be intolerant and to promote the stigma. What sticks in my mind, and I'll defend this as opposed to making anybody from Transitions have to defend it. So, is there's a housing project that you guys are working on over behind the old General Hospital, okay? That's actually a tremendous change in what was a beat up old building and used to be an orphanage. But the negativity of some of the people who live near that, because that project was going to be independent living for people who have some mental health issues. Well, you don't have to use the word, I will. The appalling comments that came out when that was discussed at the San Luis Obispo City Council, I found revolting. Yeah. But that perpetuates part of that may not perpetuate the stigma. The stigma is self-perpetuating, but it makes more aware to the surrounding community and those of us who don't see things that way that has not gone away. And I don't know how we address things like that, but I believe that the projects that you're taking on, like this presentation, are part of that issue.
And that's a great segue into the presentation, Journey of Hope, because what we're finding, you know, is that, I mean, people, it's kind of human nature. You fear what you don't know or you don't understand, right? And so by getting to have encounters with people who have lived experience with mental illness gets to humanize it and to not have this be something out in the distance that I fear and don't know about and I don't know what to expect. So the whole point of sharing stories, and that's the premise of Journey of Hope, is it's people coming together, and it's just storytelling. It's saying, hey, here's who I am, and here's what I experience. You know, I am not my illness. I am not bipolar. I experience bipolar disorder. And being able to kind of connect that and humanize it in order to educate the community and say, you know, I'm not someone to be feared. I'm not someone you don't want to live next to, etc. And I think that's a powerful message.
I think it's probably important as we talk about the program coming up that this is not a program designed for healthcare or mental health care professionals. Exactly. This is designed for the community.
Exactly. So this is a program that we put on. It's not, you know, it's not a seminar. It's not a training. It's a community forum for the community by the community. And so the people that we're having on is from all walks of the community. So we have people who work with Transitions Mental Health Association. We have people Adam, who he's an alumni of Cal Poly, and he was the president of the Active Minds chapter at Cal Poly, which is a club on campus designated to helping students with mental health and mental wellness. And we have, who else we have? We have a local psychiatrist coming to tell his experience. We have our keynote speaker, Dr. Eleanor Longden, coming from all the way from the UK to share her experience about when her mental health symptoms started appearing in college at that time, and the way she was looked at from other people and the way that her symptoms were understood as being something I need to be afraid of and I need to run away from and I need to squash, instead of trying to really understand it and see what is this coming from, what is going on. And so again it's not a training, it's just people sharing their stories. So the purpose is to reach people by people.
Yeah. And as you were saying that, I want to bring up something that I've thought is a very common irony within society. There are lots of people locally who can shed a lot of light on these kind of issues. Mm-hmm. I've got three of them sitting at the table, and I thank you all for being here. We tend to show up more, though, if we can import someone from out of the area as not necessarily the authority, mm-hmm. but the wise new voice from outside of our community. It seems to be that we pay better attention to those kind of people than we do to ourselves. And I think a lot of what you folks are dealing with mental health, has to do with getting people to pay attention to what's around them.
Sure. Well, the history of this event, though, has always embraced the local voice as well as that out-of-town voice, because it's no different than, you know, my background in music. You book a band sometimes just so you want people to see the opening act, right? And the opening act is no one knows who they are, right? But sometimes they're the most impactful. So I look back on the Journey of Hope we did 4 years ago, which was military-focused, veteran-focused. Mm-hmm. We had a phenomenal keynote address by a woman named Carol Graham, whose husband, General Mark Graham, is one of the leading experts in mental health care within the military. They had lost two sons, one to suicide and one to an explosive leading a troop in Iraq. It's a phenomenal story. She was a great keynote. If you ask anybody who was at that event, most of them will tell you the thing they remember the most was a San Luis High graduate who was also involved in an explosion with a troop overseas in the war and lost nine brothers in combat, and the trauma and the PTSD. So the story didn't matter necessarily that it was a traumatic one. It was that it was local and people were connected, that this is somebody who I live next door to. Mm-hmm. This is somebody who I shop at the grocery store with. You made the comment about, the issues with, what we call, NIMBYism, or not in my backyard, right? And the people who might complain about, housing or whatever it is. And I just always remind people, the statistic has not changed in 30 years. One in four Americans has a mental illness or a mental health issue. In this room, that means that's us, right? And so it's our household. It's our workplace. It's our classroom. So we have to stop treating people with the others. And I always try to get people to think of it in terms of, if you replace mental health with the word cancer, try saying the sentence again, mm-hmm. And you'll start to recognize that bias is one that can be easily washed away with education. Once we really know that it's us that we're talking about, I think Journey of Hope has done that well. Every year, since the first couple years, we have introduced local voices who are sharing in this real universal experience. And so I think it's a good thing to talk about, but people that come to this event are going to hear a wide variety of input.
That's what I think sometimes is really powerful about having that sort of, quote, outside voice, right? Somebody coming from the outside, is when we see somebody whose experience, whose life experience looks vastly different from our own, but we can hear pieces of our own story and what they're saying and things that we have experienced in our own life. I think that does also help kind of normalize it across any of those barriers that we might think, oh, that doesn't happen to people like me or people like that. And we see that that's just simply not true.
And in a lot of cases, I think this all comes back in a number of different ways to what our comfort zone is. Mm-hmm. The people around the people who are around that housing project in San Luis Obispo, their comfort, they've got to look at where their comfort zone is. The other one that comes to mind is the issue when someone was planning a private mental health hospital in Templeton, that somehow the fact that this was 100 yards from a very large hospital and surrounded by medical buildings became this, I can put up with anything, but I can't put up with crazy people in my neighborhood. Yeah. And that kind of attitude. And I was at some of the public hearings about that, and to say that they were just some of those people were morbidly revolting. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy to say, but I will admit, but I'm willing to say it on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I worry more about those people than the people that hospital is going to treat. But mm-hmm. that's maybe an issue for another program.
Book me on that program.
Yeah, and I will say one in four. Yeah. Right, we're already in your neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I know who you are and going and what's going on in your life, we can have a far more connected life than if I never quite know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have a caller. Let me just look at. Okay, okay, Diana, in Pismo Beach, are you there? Is that Paso or Pismo?
Paso.
Oh, Paso. Robles. Sorry. Okay. Anyway, Tyler's writing is okay. Sorry about that. Anyway, go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. I just would like to tell you guys that we have a support group for families who have a loved one who is suffering or struggling with a mental wellness issue, and we meet at the Lifehouse in the Tascadero by the Rotunda, the Sunken Garden, every other Monday, the first and the third Monday. We're also, and I'm the facilitator in that group, we're also co-teaching, me and another person, a 12-week class, which begins February 13th, and that's held in Paso Robles, and it's free to any family member who might have a friend or loved one that they're concerned about that is struggling with a mental wellness issue. It's very informative. You'll learn all about mental health, the current diagnoses and symptoms. You'll learn skills and be able to practice how to deal with your loved ones. We have a speaker or two coming in, one with a lived mental illness experience of their very own, and another one who is an advocate in the NAMI.
Diana, you know what I'd like to do is I'm going to, when you get off the air here in a minute, I'm going to put you back on hold and have you talk to our producer so Caroline can get some contact information, because her job is community outreach coordinator for Transitions Mental Health. I think they would like to know how to be in contact with you and be able to tell people about your program also.
Sounds great.
Okay.
So I'd like to encourage anybody to sign up for that class, and we've got a phone number, which I'll give. Okay. Would you like me to give that number?
No, actually, right. No, because at this point, I'm going to put you on hold and let our producer take the information, and then we'll have it for later on. Okay. All righty. Tyler's already got that. That was fast. Okay. Anyway, so we'll get that passed on to you then, Caroline.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
Because there are probably my hunch is this is not the only thing like that going on that you may not be aware of, because an awful lot of support like that goes on under the radar in any kind of situation. But my hunch is with mental health issues, it goes on under the radar because a lot of people don't feel safe if they're not under the radar. And I think that goes back to what we're talking about, mm-hmm. with the issues of stigma involved in this. One of the key – as I looked at the materials that – you folks provided for me to help prepare for the show, one of the things that stuck out to me was one of the things we ask what kind of things you have that are questions that you get asked or that you think are important. And one of them was that people ask you, when's a good time to talk to somebody with a mental illness? And I think that becomes a big thing. It's the best analogy I can come up for with it is, when is the best time to talk to someone who has just lost the death of a family member or a close friend? Gee, when's a good time to talk to them? Should I talk to them? And I don't live locally, so do I call them the day after the death? Do I call them a month afterwards when things are settled down? And I think those questions come up all the time. And my hunch is it's probably – in my mind, as I look through all the material, I think it's probably one of the things that's the most key for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And I think that context really matters and relationship really matters, right? When is the best time to talk to somebody about a concern I have about their mental health? So much depends on what's your relationship and what does that look like. But that doesn't tend to be a conversation that people approach kind of willy-nilly, like, hey, I know this person sort of from a class, and I'm just going to stop and ask. Mm-hmm. It tends to be in closer relationships. And I usually tell people, you know, trust your gut. If you're coming at it with empathy and with kindness and out of real care for how are you doing, right? You know, there are a lot of really tough conversations to have, but how are you doing? And really tell me about, like, I see that you seem to be struggling. Let's talk. I think that's really hugely important, and the willingness to hear. I think that the asking is tied intimately to, you got to be willing to hear what they have to say too, mm-hmm. and really listen.
It's not a question that you're going to get a 30-second answer.
Exactly. Well, you hope, you right?
Imagine? Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, and to Kirsten's point, there is context in the relationship. And I can't tell you how many times when I'm out in the community speaking with people, we do a lot of these local sharing of stories, you know, personal presentations out in the community quite often, aside from just Journey of Hope that happens once a year. And when people come up afterwards, they've said, you know, at times before, people said, oh, I was going to say something, but I was so worried about it not being the right time. And they say, that's the exact time I needed someone to reach out to me. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes from such a good place of just, I'm worried I'm going to make it worse. I'm worried that they're so in the midst of this, whether, you know, whether it be a mental illness, the grieving process. I mean, so many different things. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's just, I'll let things settle down. But in reality, that kind of perpetuates it a little bit, right? Of there's a fear in talking about it. And so being able to kind of break through that fear and just say, I know that this might not be the best time and that you're going through a lot, but I just want to let you know that I'm here for you mm-hmm. when you're ready to talk. That can be so, so much more powerful than calculating in your own head when the perfect time to talk is, because in reality, there might not be a right time. And in the second point is that you can only guess for that person. Yeah. The only way to know is to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My hunch is that all three of you see this in our community and see an awful lot of people who are by default isolated. It's, you know, Frank, when you were talking about an experience at the Journey of Hope program a few years ago, mm-hmm. And the issue of PTSD for mm-hmm. for some individuals. When you said that, it made me recall the fact that I know someone mm-hmm. who finally has basically said and acknowledged that they have PTSD, completely unrelated to a war situation. Mm-hmm. It's for them, it's 100% related to a medical situation mm-hmm. that became a life-threatening crisis, mm-hmm. and they solved the medical situation, mm-hmm. but they haven't been able to solve the PTSD sure. because nobody in their life feels like it's okay to talk about it.
Oh, sure.
And I think that's probably a population that you're looking at in a lot of ways. You know, 30 years ago, we didn't talk about PTSD. I don't know if technically when it actually officially existed as a condition that we could label. But, you know, I'm in my 60s, and when I was in my 30s, it wasn't the way you looked at this. Mm-hmm. It was just...
Well, so you've just... Bringing us back full circle to college students, this is where we're spending a lot of time and discussion right now with the community. PTSD or any type of impact that mental health has on our veteran community creates issues of stigma. And it's very similar to what our young people who are, or not just our young people, our students' population are going through now too, which is cultural. Mm-hmm. The veteran culture, the military culture, is one to not address that part of the impact, right? That pain or suffering, it is to muddle through, it's to weather it through for whatever cultural reason, whether it's gender-based or, you know, military-based, whatever it might be. It's very similar to what our students are going through now, too, which is not wanting to address their anxiety, their depression, their suicidal ideations, or maybe it is... their first episode of some mm-hmm. sort of psychosis, mm-hmm. voices, whatever it might be, because they don't understand that this is the time when these things happen, or in the military, these are the reasons things happen. So I'm seeing a lot of parallels right now between the veterans and the active military who we're trying to engage mm-hmm. with our student population too, which is we have to cut through a cultural stigma first. Mm-hmm. And you just described it perfectly. 30 years ago, we didn't talk about it. Didn't mean it didn't exist, right? It's just we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that we knew how to label it, which mm-hmm. is what I was thinking about as a big concern.
Same on the college end. And I'm saying that's not 30 years ago. I'm saying 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we weren't on college campuses speaking as openly about first episode psychosis mm-hmm. or anxiety and depression leading to suicide as we are now, because we are finally starting to be okay with breaking through. I give the military culture and the breaking of that stigma, the attempts to, a lot of credit for other movements. And this goes for our spiritual population, which have cultural reasons to, you know, place stigma in front of help. So we are seeing this movement happening. it goes back to that open dialogue piece. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you would agree
with
that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as you were saying that, I was thinking about students and the college students that I come across and just this sense that I just have to put my head down and get through this. This is what I'm supposed to do for 4 years. And so whatever else is going on, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to engage with that because I am a student. I am here to achieve a certain thing. And so the conversation tends to be around less around like, wow, I'm really struggling, and more around like, hey, I stayed up all night last night to study for a test. And that's really normalized. Like, oh yeah, I did that 3 times last week. And so this like this push to continue forward and to not take a step back and a breath to talk about what might be labeled or seen by them as a weakness, and instead just go through it, just power through it.
Yeah, I think there's some issues with that community. It's happened in our county. It's happened a lot of different places. There is a there's some negative reaction to the Greek community on the college campuses. But as I look at that and think about it from our discussion today, what happens with a lot of the issues that are happening in the Greek community, the fraternity and sorority community, is that there are people looking for a safe haven for any kind of support. And unfortunately, if you're an 18 or 19-year-old person who cannot legally go out to a bar and drink, but you want the environment of drinking with your friends, that kind of focuses around that community. And that seems to be a way for some of the people who may have some mental health issues to find a way to fit in what can be an unconstructive way. And I don't want to pick on that community. I'm not trying to imply that. But I think it gives us an understanding of what the frustration of not having a safe environment. I mean, I was raised in the 60s. I graduated high school in 69. There was actually someone who was a mental health professional who was a high school teacher at my school, and we actually had a support group that somehow spontaneously formed with this teacher. That was something that happened a lot in the 60s, and it kind of went all the way in the 70s for some reason. Mm-hmm. But I think that there, for a lot of college kids, the ability to find a support group, maybe in a support group that isn't always the healthiest environment.
Well, it's not just college students. So what we know in youth development research is that a child is looking for several things, and structure being one of those, a league, an association being another. Sometimes that's family, right? Mm-hmm. And we hope that that is family, and we hope that that is positives, right? But sometimes that family is created through maybe a gang. Or maybe it's created through a team, or maybe it's created through a fraternity at some point. Whatever it might be, because we have a natural inclination to find those associations and leagues. So I agree with you in that I think there are young people throughout, you know, the age span and the school age who are looking for those associations for whatever reason it might be. I tend to think, though, that most who are looking are not looking based on trying to find somebody who is going to minimize their kind of emotional impact, right, or their mental illness, whatever it might be, undiagnosed or even not even recognized, as much as that's just a natural youth development thing to move towards an association or a league. What we can do with that is we can help educate those systems, whether those athletics, schools, associations, clubs, et cetera, to be able to identify when a young person reaches the age where they might be able to start identifying some emotional need too. And I think that's where we're all working kind of towards that process.
Yeah.
Caroline, you looked like you had something to jump in there with.
I was just like fascinated and going, yes, like Frank, keep going. Cause you're right on it. And I love that so much.
Artie.
And that is a big piece of what we're doing, right, is we're reaching out to these communities on campus because community is incredibly important to everybody, right? But you get students who are coming together again at 17, 18 years old, and they're in a new environment and a new place, and they're looking for community and looking for a place to belong and feel like is home. So we do a lot of education and outreach to those groups to talk about how do you talk to a friend who you're worried about? How do you talk to them about what they're experiencing within themselves and opening that door to creating a more connected, more meaningful, more authentic community, I suppose.
Yeah. Let's revisit that because we've got a couple of calls we've kept on hold for a while here. Okay, Leslie, you're on the air, and I appreciate your patience with us. You still there?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Okay. Okay, so one of the comments that I had was one of the things that I think that contributes to the stigma or to people not wanting to admit their issues is that there's a lot out there in the medical community about medication and being on medication. You know, once you're on medication, you have to stay on medication for life and that whole thing. And I just wanted to put out there that there are scientifically valid ways to treat mental illness without medication, and there are also scientifically valid and proven ways to withdraw from medication. And so that kind of opens up the ballpark, if you will, to somebody being able to say, oh, well, maybe I don't have to go on meds and be on them for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say in response to that, and I appreciate you calling in and bringing up that really important point, because people are very curious about that, whether it's for themselves or for others, and the question of medication comes up frequently. Mm-hmm. What I kind of tend to tell people is that what does recovery mean to a person? It's very, very individual. And you'll see mm-hmm. that there are of such a wide variety of interventions that we can use in order to help people get better. And mm-hmm. for three people who have the same illness, if they're diagnosed with major depressive disorder, they could try three of the same antidepressants, and they might have likely than not, we'll have a pretty decent variety of responses to that medication. And so I think just people who are looking somewhere for the answer to what they're suffering with mm-hmm. is just educating and learning about all the options that are on the table. And, medication's a big one because it is stigmatized. I know a lot of people who, even if they know the research behind it, are just, I can't be someone who's on medication. I just can't be. And so clearly there's something in our society that is telling people, if you need medication for your mental illness, you know, we don't tend to do it as much with physical illnesses, mm-hmm. then that's not okay and something's wrong with you. And, you know, we don't want that message. And on the flip side, if people, aren't ready yet, that's fair too. And kind of again with Journey of Hope, you'll see with the speakers that we have that night, there is a wide variety in how the speakers approach medication in their own recovery. But again, I just like to emphasize to people, it is so individual. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the point that I wanted to make also was that medication is often one of the first routes that people look at, and it's not, and there are a lot of side effects to medication. And so what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that there's never a place for medication. What I'm saying is that it ought to be weighed with other things that can be done, and there are scientifically valid things that can be done. So, when you're talking about cognitive behavioral therapy and things of that nature, you know, you're talking about ways that people can actually learn how to step outside of themselves and actually deal with their problem and not have to medicate themselves. And I know every situation is different, but often that's something, you know, those kinds of things aren't even brought to the table. And so people don't even, you know, they try to hide their problem because they don't want to have to go on meds.
Yeah. Thanks for the point, and thanks for the call, Leslie.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. We have Ben online, too. Hold on a second. Ben, are you there? Thanks for your patience.
Yeah.
Okay. You need to turn your radio down, please.
It's off.
Okay. No problem. It sounded like we were getting some feedback, so go ahead.
Is it better now?
It's better now, yeah.
Okay. I've been on medication for, 20 years? Mm-hmm. So this last caller isn't really very helpful for me.
Well, people are entitled to their opinion, I guess, is what I have to tell you.
Yeah. Oh, no. I wish I could be off medication. But... Yeah. And yet...
I think our point, Ben, is that everybody has to find the path that's best for them. Yeah. And it sounds like you've found the path that's helping you the most.
Absolutely.
Oh, I wanted to talk about Instacart. I've been... I was in San Luis Obispo, and I was there for a year, and I failed to find a job. It was kind of the same thing that happened to me in college. I wish that I'd had a job in college. In fact, if I had had a job I think that would have been really a great way to interface with the community, as well as, you know, fighting stigma. And, you know, I didn't really know what was going on in college. I still don't, but, I mean, I have very little insight, but, you know, I'm on medication and are working, finally, thanks to the gig economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up a point. So, I would assume you felt like finding a job that would work for you was a way to fit into a community that you at that point had not found a way to fit into before.
Well, in Santa Cruz, I took all the classes I could in every subject that interested me, and then at the end, I realized that I had nothing to show for my interest because they weren't focused. I mean, maybe that's the definition of schizophrenia, but I've gone through all kinds of different diagnoses, but now I'm, you know, toying with autism, and I'm basically on a medication that's acceptable to people with autism, generally speaking, and I have a job.
Good for
I have
you.
A wife, I have a daughter, I'm doing pretty well.
That's very good.
That's very powerful.
Thanks very much for the call, Ben. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I
thank
recommend
you.
Instacart to anybody who wants to interface better with their parents.
Okay.
thank you.
Let's see. Elisa in San Luis Obispo. Thanks very much for your patience, Elisa.
Hello, all. I know pretty much everyone on that panel. I just wanted to kind of add to the conversation about Cal Poly and the difference. I was there for my undergrad back in 2010-ish, and then going back for my graduate work now, and I personally experienced a significant mental health episode about a year and a half ago, and it ties into everything that everyone is saying. I did feel safe enough to approach my professors, let them know what was going on, and I remember the most normalizing conversation with one of them, and they relayed that when they were in graduate school, they experienced something very, very similar. And I remember thinking in that moment, wow, I'm nothing special in a good way. Like, we have this common, we've had this common experience. And though they didn't know exactly what I was going through, there was enough commonality there that we could connect on that. And I think that that is really what spurred my, in that moment, that recovery forward of knowing that someone got it. But it took that courage on my end to just relay, hey, this is what I'm experiencing right now. So there are some areas of academia at Cal Poly that are so open to hearing from students, and they want to know, hey, I'm struggling with this. And I think a large part is due to the work that's been done at Campus Health and Wellbeing of changing that conversation and having all the events and active minds as well. So yeah. Just wanted to, I guess, kind of give a shout out to all of that, because there's definitely been a culture change over the past 10 years.
And I think I could definitely, hi, Elisa, it's Kirsten. I can speak to that a bit. I did my undergrad at Cal Poly and had no real inkling that I could go to my professors or somebody on staff and say, I'm struggling and this is how I'm struggling. And what I have seen in the last, my last 5 years working at Cal Poly is the tremendous number of faculty, staff, everybody who works there, just hearing from so many of them like that they want to be that. They want to be able to identify themselves to their students before the students have to take that kind of brave step of, are you going to hear me and understand or not? They want to be able to identify themselves as, yes, I am here. This is part of my job, is to listen and to help you in whatever form that takes, help you succeed. And I am open to and will support you in this process. And I do think that that is something that I hear a lot. And I see a lot of students who are reluctant to go forward for many very good reasons. But it's a very true statement.
So you're seeing a positive backlash to the fact that it got ignored long enough and there was a serious crisis for an awful lot of students that wasn't getting noticed. You ended up with staff members and faculty that all of a sudden said, we could be more supportive if we were just paying attention.
I think there's a combination of that and more as we are understanding, right? I go back to that statement, 1 in 4. You know, students aren't the only ones that are struggling and challenged with it, right? And more we're being willing as staff and faculty members to step up and say, you know what, I struggled with that too. And so I am a resource for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cal Poly was...
And I think that's changing the conversation academia. Just that's a field that I'm interested in going into, and I think that it is still a problem. We want to be our best. We don't want to show any weakness. Yeah. It can be a very cutthroat kind of I wouldn't say culture to some extent, but I think that's what I've learned in talking with professors over multiple colleges at Cal Poly, that this is it's very common when you're in undergrad and graduate school to experience, a significant increase in mental health symptoms. And it's not talked about as much, but it is starting to become a part of that conversation, no matter what the curriculum is.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, thanks for your points, and thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
I think the point I was going to make to that was that I wouldn't say that Cal Poly was ignoring this. Mm-hmm. I think Cal Poly as an institution, much like every other university, much like most school systems, didn't know that this was an issue they were going to have to address in the way they had to address it. Because as Cal Poly I've worked with a university now for 25 years. It has been an evolution around both mental health issues, substance use issues, residential living issues, that we are just a different society now. Now, there's a lot of reasons, for that, the way that we can acknowledge that some of these things get in the way of our success, but that university, like many others, is driven by success. And that means sometimes things get left to the side of the road, we'll just say. And Cal Poly, I give it a lot of credit, has really started to pull those things back in and recognize that its academic success, its prosperity, is related to the health and well-being of its student population, mm-hmm. as well as its staff and faculty population. More work to be done everywhere, but I just think it's part of the times. I don't think we would see this very differently in a lot of communities. So I think it's a good thing, but it has to be acknowledged. I wouldn't say that Cal Poly was ignoring it, no differently than I think most of California was ignoring things when we began introducing stigma as a topic in 2005. It was really the first time we came out as a state and we said, hey, this is a number one impediment.
It started a lot of discussions. I can actually remember right on Quest to Grade, coming down the grade, where there was an Avoid the Stigma billboard for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it became something to pay attention to. I think what we also got from our first caller and was, among other things, is more efforts for there to be peer support. Mm-hmm. Because for a lot of people, maybe once you've conquered some of the roadblocks that you're dealing with, it gets expensive to continue to conquer those in the same way you may be conquering them this year. So some peer support groups, peer environments like that, I think are very...
Yes.
Have got to be key.
Oh, we have found them to be so key. I mean, Transitions Mental Health Association alone has a lot of programs specifically on that premise of recovery happens through peer-to-peer connections and someone who has been through it before and knows what you're going through. And so one example would be the Peer Advisory and Advocacy Team, or PAT. Another one is our mental health advocates. They're people that you can call and set up an appointment, and they are people who have lived experience with mental illness who can help you navigate really anything. I mean, whether it's calling doctor's offices, whether it's getting connected to the supported employment program and trying to figure out, how do I reenter the workforce and getting connected to that program. The list could go on and on about but they're really just there for, I've been through it and I'm a support and I'm very educated on the resources in this community. So how can I help you in that?
And as you were talking about that, what occurred to me is that, and we forget to talk about it sometimes, is that Growing Grounds in San Luis County, mm-hmm. which is a place for employment for people who have been clients of Transitions Mental Health, is a commercial nursery. Mm-hmm. It's not a garden project. It indeed is a commercial nursery that functions.
Absolutely. And we have a storefront downtown San Luis Obispo where we also employ people. And our supportive employment program does work with Growing Grounds extensively. But then also, aside from that, works with people who are looking for employment, whether it be within Tima's agency or outside of the agency, but just building those skills to help people feel confident being in that workforce, living with their mental illness.
I'm just going to jump in and brag a little bit. So
absolutely.
before I got here, and bragging for the county, right before I got here today, we were finishing a meeting. We just had a state review of our Mental Health Services Act programs, which are what fund part of Growing Grounds and the Growing Grounds Retail, as well as some of these programs we're all talking about here. And they made it very clear in their review that we were given an A+, I'll quote the reviewer, in our engagement of peers. And that's something this county, Tima at the lead, has been, Transitions Mental Health Association, has been at the lead of engaging our lived experience population. But I'm going to go back even a step further. This county has always been at the forefront of engaging people with lived experience. And I come from the substance use side. That's where I started. And the recovery community, and Cal Poly has now built its Mustangs for Recovery organization, which Kristen can probably tell us about too.
Yes.
But it's that identification of people with lived experience. And that's not just people who may be consumers of mental health or substance use services, but family members as well, to be able to engage others. This county does it very well. And if for those folks out there who are family members or in recovery themselves, who want to know more, all of our organizations embrace peer support and lived experience.
Well, actually, based upon the transition you're doing here, I'll tell you that was part of your closing comment time. So now you have about a minute to wrap up if you need, Frank. I realize in your case more than a minute is not enough. But
I'll do it fast because I'm with two really dynamic, incredible partners to us. I will say this: and I'll talk about our partners. Our partnership with Cal Poly has blossomed over the last few years around both the substance use and the mental health issues. We have work being done now both in Kirsten's office. We have a liaison that's between the county and the she's actually at Cuesta College right now doing some outreach work, our suicide prevention coordination. We actually have a therapist who's embedded in the housing parts of Cal Poly to work with young people who are experiencing their first breaks. Cal Poly has been a tremendous partner in this, as well as Transitions Mental Health Association and all the CBOs, the community-based organizations we work with. It's a true takes a village kind of approach, and this county does it really well. I hope people will come to the Journey of Hope and meet all of us, because we'll all be there. It's a great event.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, Frank.
Kirsten.
I don't even know if I'll take the whole 2 minutes, because I feel like Frank spoke to the partnerships really, really well.
Yes.
And what we're doing. I think I would just leave this conversation with the encouragement to talk to each other, to be open to having these conversations, talk to the people you care about, the people you love, ask them how they're doing, open the door to a conversation, a real conversation around how your mental health is, how their mental health is, and where they need support and where they might get connected. Because I think that's really, I always come from a kind of a model of like culture change, right? And how do we change the culture? We change that one-on-one with each other, in community with one another, and starting with that first thing is that have that conversation and trust your gut and don't be afraid to step forward and share and be part of these communities that were mentioned.
Well, I'll give you a shout out to something, and that is I think that with the new housing that Cal Poly has on campus now, I think the efforts you're making for incoming freshmen and getting more people on campus and less out of the non-university run chaos of the surrounding community, I think is very commendable. And I would say the people who were upset about the new housing probably should pay attention to how many students there are on campus now, as opposed to scrambling to find a place to live in San Luis Obispo.
Absolutely.
And I hope that carries over in some of the mental health support areas, because I think it probably does.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that for sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
And since it's my turn, I'll also add to that, you know, if there are Cal Poly students listening, I do want them to know as well that, you know, help can be found within the entire community. I know that when I was a student here, I can't even tell you how many mountains I did not hike until after I graduated. Here, I hiked one. I hiked Bishop's, and that was it. And I was not aware of what was available to me as a community member of San Luis Obispo. I stayed really in that Cal Poly community, which was great, but also since I've graduated and lived here upon, you know, for almost a decade now, I found, wow, there was so much here that was available to me that I didn't know about. So I just like to invite, you know, students to explore with us, you know, the county, TEMA. We all have really good resources that are available. But also, so kind of business plugs, I got to talk about Journey of Hope.
talk about Journey of Hope. That's why you're the last in the rotation, because we got to make sure people remember that.
Awesome. Yeah, so we've talked about Journey of Hope a lot. It's a community forum on living mentally well, and you'll hear from a wide variety of speakers with lived experiences their journey on the way to recovery, and that process and what that looked like for them. We also have a really great musical performance. There's just a lot about this program that we're really excited for, including our keynote speaker, Dr. Eleanor Longden, who, if you have a moment, or 14 minutes to be exact, her TED Talk is online. You can YouTube on TED.com. And it's been translated into 37 languages. It's been viewed over 4 million times. So I really encourage people to watch kind of where her message is. And for details on the event, it is next Wednesday, February 6th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at New Life Church in Pismo Beach. It's from 6 to 8. We will have resource fairs available before and after the event, where local community resources will be there informing the attendees of the event, you know, hey, here's what's out there. So we're really looking forward to it.
Okay. And is there a charge for this?
It is completely free.
It is free.
And open to all community members.
And the location again is?
New Life Church in Pismo Beach.
Okay. It's actually right off the freeway over on James Way, if I recall, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's a large building, so there's room for pretty much anybody that wants to be there.
Oh, I think it holds over 900 people. So, yeah. And then the last thing I just wanted to say was on behalf of Transitions Mental Health Association, if you have any questions about our services, you can go to T as in Tom, -MHA.org. And also you can call our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline. It's a credited crisis hotline, but you can also call if you're looking for resources. If you have a friend who said something concerning and you just don't know quite what to say, this is available for you, again, 24 hours, 7 days a week. It is anonymous, 1-800-783-0607.
And what I will insert is, if people just Google Transitions SLO, they'll find it, and
they
that
will.
Works. Yeah. Okay. I thank you all very much. I appreciate
it.
I want to remind you that next week I'll be back with you. We're a little out of rotation, so I apologize for you getting stuck with me 2 weeks in a row. If you listened to last week, it's 3 weeks in a row, and I apologize for all of that. We're going to talk next week about dental hygiene and preventive medical dental care for primarily children and low-income families. It is a crisis in our community. There are over 12,000 children enrolled in the Dentical program for children, and it's not nearly addressing everybody who has a need in that area. So join us next week. We will talk about dental care primarily for children and those who are not in insurance environments on a regular basis. And of course, you know, this has been Central Coast Voices. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org. I want to thank my guests today, Frank, Kirsten, Caroline. Thank you very much. We have filled all the time, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk, and it's been a very enjoyable thing. And I thank you to our callers who called in to be part of this program also today. Your contribution to that discussion has been very delightful to have part of it. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thanks for joining us.